Before we get started with this edition of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, a couple things to talk to you about real quick. FanShareSports.com, they've been a great supporter of the Always Pressing podcast from the get-go, and they do NFL and PGA. I've mentioned them on this show and on the two-point conversion NFL DFS podcast. Great, great product they have going on over there. Right now, the early bird NFL package is running out soon, August 31st, to be in fact, to get the NFL season for $99.95. So go check that out over at FanShareSports.com. Use promo code ALWAYSPRESS to get the discount for the season pass, or to any package of their choice, get 25% off by using Always Press, all one word, Always Press, FanShareSports.com. Also, go check out Thrive Fantasy. Awesome way to play daily fantasy sports. It's with a twist. It's with prop bets. They have NFL. They have PGA now. They have NHL, NBA, all the good stuff. They have NFL preseason. You name it, they got it. MLB. So go check it out, Thrive Fantasy. When you make your first deposit of $10 or more and use promo code SportsDGens, you get a free $10 into your account. So go to Thrive Fantasy. Promo code SportsDGens for a free $10. Now, without further ado, welcome to the Always Pressing PGA DFS Podcast, previewing the 2019 Tour Championship.
Play. Sir. Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building.
Yeah. All right, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come up.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS Podcast. This is the finale of the 2018-2019 PGA Tour season, the Tour Championship. It's going to be a fun one and a weird one. In order to break it all down, my co-host, as always, you can find him on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how we doing, man?
Doing well, dude. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Disappointed I didn't get to play any golf this weekend. Pretty sure you got to bang it around a bit. How was the birthday weekend?
Yeah, it was okay. I played the worst. I played all summer long yesterday.
Well, you can't win every week.
Well, it wasn't like it was just when I went out and played with some friends or whatever. But yeah, I got some new golf shoes. I don't know if that was it or not.
Could have been it. Blame the tools.
That's what I'm blaming for now. But yeah, the week before I go to Sweetens, I'm playing the worst golf of my summer. So that's great.
Never fails, right? Never fails. When your most exciting moment comes up, you're playing shit golf. Never fails.
Right.
But that's the way life goes, and the PGA Tour bros will tell you all about it because we see it week in, week out. We talk about it. How could these guys be so bad after doing this so good? And it's golf.
Yeah.
Golf in a nutshell. So let's recap the BMW Championship real quick before we get into East Lake and the craziness that will be East Lake. JT gets it done. First win in like a year and a half, almost 2 years. He played really, really well, lit the course up, set a course record of the 61, I believe. You had Hideki going 63 twice with a 73 in the middle of it. If he has a half-decent day on Saturday, he might win the damn thing. Cantlay was awesome. I got to watch a lot on Sunday. I don't think you did, but watching JT and Cantlay go back and forth, it felt like an awesome fight. Like when a guy missed a putt, you saw the reaction on one of their faces when they made a putt. It was pretty sweet. It was good stuff. A lot of good golf out there. A lot of really good golf. Do you have any takeaways from the BMW?
JT, I mean, it was, I guess he was trending that direction. Mentioned people chasing his strokes gained approach numbers last week, and, you know, kind of finally came to fruition there for those guys. Didn't have any of them on DK, so it was not a good week at 30%. JT ownership. I really expected that course to play a little bit tougher. I know it was wet and everything, but like that's just one of those courses now that even though they've lengthened it, the guy still just – did you see some of the shots like that Rory and
cutting Rom and stuff,
the rest of it? Yeah, just blast right over top of the dog leg. Yeah, just ridiculous. Don't even give a shit about the dog leg. You know, turn a 450-yard par four into a 350-yard par four. Yep. So, yeah, I was surprised. I mean, even though, you know, Tiger had shot 18 under there previously, it was a long time ago, but there's a lot of low numbers, dude. And, like, the winning scores on DraftKings, like, dudes are up in the 700s. That's
insane.
Quite insane. But JT, man, he had just an incredible stretch on Saturday where he made a par out of the water and then hold out for eagle and then threw just an absolute dart into 17 and then drilled that putt. Shoot 11 under. I think the course record was broken like three or four times. Yeah.
Kokrak on Thursday, Hideki on Friday, JT on Saturday.
Yeah, and then Hideki backs it up again, man. Like you said, he shot 63 on Sunday to come and improve himself 10 shots. That's just wild to me.
Yeah, it was crazy. Hideki entered Sunday on the bubble, if not out of the top 30. And I thought that was crazy. I was talking with guys on Twitter about it. I never really paid that close attention because Hideki was just making cut after cut. Seemed like he was top 20 in it a lot. I figured he'd be coasting into the top 30, and it wasn't even close. Like, he had to play his ass off on Sunday just to get in there. That's why it was fun to watch, because there was guys making putts. You could see the reliefs on it because they all knew where they were. Poston played great golf. He was birdieing things towards the end, and then he missed a putt on 18, or he bogeyed 17, one of the two. And you can see the look on his face. He's like, and he finished like 31st. Like, he knew exactly what happened. It was pretty cool watching him. Lucas Glover played his ass off. He almost blew it at the end, a double and a regular bogey on 16 and 17. But then it was pretty good after the round. They asked, well, you know, it's been about 10 years since you've been to East Lake. You've gone through some trials and tribulation. How do you feel? He's all, I worked my ass off for this one. I was like, that a boy.
Kokrak birdied the last hole to get in, too.
Yep, he made like a 12, 15 foot or something. Yeah, there was some good stuff going on towards the end there, some good drama.
Which is the only time that a FedEx Cup update matters.
Yes, I agree. I guess that's the bright side of the new format. We don't have any updates. This is how it's going to be.
Yeah, there will be no updates this week.
Yep, no updates at all. It'll be pretty crazy. But yeah, no LT Gray, no Phil. Did you hear about Phil and Cantlay's Phil and Poston's hotel catching fire on Sunday?
I did.
And,
I saw
they
that.
They barely got to the course. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I saw the Phil tweet.
Yeah, Poston said he literally just grabbed the clothes he needed, and he walked from his hotel to the course, went through the main like general admission gates, and then had a guy in a golf cart drive him to the clubhouse.
Oh shit!
Wow. Oh yeah, it was pretty crazy. I was like, Jesus, criminy. But yeah, wild times. Good weekend. JT was. It was interesting because he was all over the place on Sunday off the tee, but once he got his approach game locked in and his short game, he was money. But he almost went completely over a fence into the parking lot on one hole. It was pretty wild. Pretty wild stuff. He had to hit one left-handed to get out of a bush after that. But, yeah, still won the tournament. But, all right, we head to the Tour Championship. 30 golfers this week. Jesse, a really weird format that we'll talk about shortly. But before we do, why don't you give us some past event history?
Yeah, the Tour Championship, it's been played at East Lake. Do you know how long it's been played at East Lake?
Quite a while, the last time I heard. I don't know the exact number. It's been a while, though.
Long time. So, but at least since 2007, when the FedEx Cup first started or whatever. Last year, Tiger Woods was the champion, and Justin Rose was the FedEx Cup champion. So that's why we've started this weird thing where basically, you know, whoever wins this tournament wins the FedEx Cup. I think there was just too many years of confusion. Xander won it in 2017. Rory won it in 2016. Jordan Spieth was the 2015 champion. Billy Horschel was the 2014 champion. Have you seen the purse for this tournament?
It's asinine.
$15 million to the winner.
The total purse is $30 million. Last place gets almost $400,000.
Do you think DraftKings had a hand in helping them to divvy up the money?
Be based on their pricing?
No, just based on the fact that they always have these top heavy GPPs.
Oh, I got you now. It would make sense. It would make sense.
$15 million to first, $5 million to second.
I feel like that's the essence
of a DK GPP.
Pretty much. I think if you finish top five, you at least get $1 million+. But yes, the ratio of first to the next position is quite the drop off. You are correct. It does feel like the millionaire in any sport on DraftKings.
Right. The millionaire maker. Yeah.
But all right, let's talk about East Lake Golf Club. You mentioned it's been played there for quite some time now. A lot of course history we'll have here. And you're going to hear the same rundown. It's a Donald Ross design. It's what we've seen it quite a few times towards the end of the season here. And Donald Ross is all about shot making. He likes to make things difficult. He likes to make the greens and around the greens complicated. He likes to flirt with your imagination a little bit, not quite like Pete Dye, but he likes to play with you, undulating greens, quick greens. It's a par 70, 7,350 yards. Pretty much everything you read, these are some of the narrowest fairways on the PGA Tour, and they're usually really firm. Now, we'll have to wait and see. There's like 50 to 60% chances of rain every day during the tournament. There's scattered showers, so it might not even hit. But you'd imagine that would soften up the fairways nicely, and this turns into a mess because all the reports were is if you can hit your driver accurately, or even a three wood or a driving iron, you're hitting wedges into a lot of these greens. It's all about accuracy because you'll go straight into this rough, and if you're in the rough, it's very penal. It's like a less than 50% greens in regulation from the rough. It's very, very complicated. You don't want to be there. You want to be in the fairway. Again, I mentioned it's kind of smaller than average greens. A lot of false fronts, a lot of drop-offs on the greens. So you want to hit the right parts of the greens, and then they're going to be fast. They're going to be 12, at least 12.5 to 13 on the stem. And like all Donald Ross designs, pretty undulated. They're Bermuda grass greens. So it's going to be an interesting task. Like you mentioned before, scoring, you can get in the 7s, the 13s based on champions. But if the guys aren't accurate, it can get interesting. That's why JT has his big lead. But at the same time, you know, the way he was hitting his driver on Sunday, if he does that, he could be in some serious trouble and drop off real, real quick. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Like Brooks and Woodland loved it because they're accurate. Other guys, it can eat your lunch at times, but with a no-cut event, you never know. But that's kind of the gist of it without getting, you know, too more complicated than people really give a rat's rear end about. A couple of the things we wanted to talk about before we get into DraftKings pricing, for those that for some reason don't know but are listening to the podcast, which would be very strange of you, the format is Justin Thomas starts out at 10 under, and we'll probably repeat these all throughout it. But Cantlay 8, Brooks 7, and it goes all the way down to DeChambeau and below are even par. But the reason I mentioned it up is their salary-wise on DraftKings makes sense for that reason, because JT starts out with 30 DraftKings points because technically he's in first place already at minus 10. Cantlay will start out with 20, Brooks 18, so on and so forth, all the way down to the even par guys at 3. But don't worry, because you know if Cantlay suddenly overtops Thomas, they'll switch. So the points don't stay at 30. It's just how you'll start out. If that makes sense. Do you have anything on that, Jesse?
Yeah, just, I mean, if you play Sunday Showdown, that's the way to kind of
there you go.
Compare it to.
It's a four-day Sunday Showdown.
Right. But birdies and bogeys and pars are all worth the normal stuff. It's not worth the showdown amount. But, yeah, so, you know, anytime you play those showdown contests on Sunday, when you start it, you notice that, you know, you're not starting out everybody equal, so. That's the way to kind of think about it. But there can be some changes, like you said. So,
yeah, it's going to get really interesting to see how it all plays out. But I posted in the Slack chat, I post the where they're all starting, what numbers they start at, what fantasy numbers they start at, with their DraftKings pricing. That whole picture is in the Slack chat. If you want to come check it out, just to ask us. It's right there. We'll probably tweet it out later from the handle as well. But it's going to be a real interesting week. I guess I was going to save the strategy for later. We can talk about it now. Before we get into the pricing, how are you? You mentioned Sunday Showdown. How are you approaching this, Jesse?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's for me anyway, in my mind, there's not the same pressure on the guys on the back end. So the guys who are starting even par, or even one or two under par, as there are on the guys up top: Justin Thomas, Cantlay, Brooks. So, like, my strategy this week is to just attack guys who are aggressive and can make birdies and can make them in bunches and hopefully climb that leaderboard and overpay their price. So that's what I'm looking at, like guys who have been hitting it close using proximity stats, ops gain stat on Fantasy Golf National. Birdie or better is going to be heavily weighted this week for me too. I mean, I know that typically this course doesn't give up a whole heck of a lot because, like you said a minute ago, you know, your score is, it's not really getting them into the mid-teens very often. Those guys from behind, they know they have to attack it, and they don't have the pressure on them. Like, they can go out Thursday, Friday and just fire at pins and you know, play aggressively and see what happens. And, you know, that could burn them. But they're guaranteed to make like 350K, so, you know, it's not that bad of a week, even if they finish DFL, you know.
And I like what you're saying there, and I'll let you keep going, but I think there's something to it with those guys towards the bottom. there's some new names down there. Like Kokrak's never been here. You got Connors. You got some of these guys that have never been here. I've never seen a $400,000 paycheck. Like, and the idea, if you know they can go shoot out their rear end and maybe finish 7 or 8 under and end up getting, you know, $700,000-$800,000. That's like life changing for these guys compared to, well, not for me, but like they have the nuts to go for it. Where I'm not saying like Casey and those guys don't care as much, but they don't need it as much. Hell, Casey, he probably would have had a better standing if he had showed up at the first FedEx event. He didn't show up to it. So I'm not saying that's going to matter, but that's just one way to look at it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that it is, you know, necessarily life-changing money for the, for these guys, but because like almost everybody in here is a past winner and they're all set. But my thought process is those guys who are way back, they just know that like it's go for broke kind of thing. So, you know, worst case scenario, they still cash a $350,000 check and they move on to next year. But if they can make some putts, if they fire at pins, you know, there's just basically a chance to just only go up. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it. Now we'll talk about kind of those guys up top and exactly how I in my mind see this playing out. But
yeah, the only other thing I kind of see, cause like the guys down below, I'm looking at guys that are just going to be aggressive. Like we'll talk about them, Sungjae and those guys. We know that just can go birdie crazy and then also go freaking bogey crazy, but they have that ability to just go bananas out there. But yeah, up top, it's more to kind of like, then you guys start thinking who can actually come from behind and win these things. And that's kind of where my head's at on these. And that'll kind of help me differentiate. And, you know, anything can happen. I could be totally wrong. And the guys I don't like could, you know, win the darn golf tournament. It's very possible, but I'm going to try to narrow it down the best I can and pray they're not chalky as hell, but we'll wait and see on that. So let's get at it then. We'll start 10K and above. JT coming in at 10 under par, 30 DraftKings points, $15,500. You got Cantlay at 12-4, Brooks at 12-2, Rory at 10-6, Reed at 10-2. So your top five in the FedEx Cup points. How are you attacking this top 10 range, Jesse?
Well, I think that this could be like the most heavily owned golfer ever in JT. At least that's the way I view it. Like most of your people are going to look at him being in the lead automatically and at least have one or two, or, you know, depending on how many lineups you play, it's all relative, but are going to play Justin Thomas. He's playing really well. Obviously he played lights out last week. He's been playing good. The issue of course is the $15,500 price tag, but he's starting out with a 2-shot lead. So I see him being really, really, really high owned. For that reason, you know, my mind, and this has not worked out the best for me this year, but like I just automatically kind of cross him off and will avoid him and skip down. I like myself, I like going down to Rory at 10-6 because you can fit in some of those guys way down the list that we'll talk about here in a minute and still plug in some other guys who have a chance to climb up the points ladder there and get more finishing position points. I do think you will have to have the winner this week in order to even min cash, because these guys will be high owned. Last year there was six dudes or five guys, basically 30% or above. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 more above 20%. So, you know, I mean, that's basically what, 14 out of 16 guys above 20%. I mean, that's half the field. You're going to have the winner in order to even min cash. So, you know, I mean, looking at JT, Cantlay, Brooks, you know, I see why you would play those. I just am kind of looking at Rory and saying, you know, past champion here, playing well, making a lot of birdies. He's, in my opinion, doesn't have the pressure that those top three guys do on him. So I could see him, you know, coming out and going low. So that's kind of where my mind is focusing at this point. He's starting 5 shots behind.
Yeah, I like Rory. He's one of the two.
Which is
like
odd that he is higher priced than Reed, who's starting 4 shots behind.
That is odd. But that is odd. You think they would have stayed down the list, but they
did
not.
Yeah, I just realized that. Yeah.
I guess they factored in probably who has the better chance to win out of the two on the odds makers platform.
I would say odds makers and then course history too. I mean, obviously Rory being a past champion here and Reed
Yeah, because really Rory's 8-1 and Reed's 14-1.
Which and he gets a shot late. Gets a shot late on him. So
he's giving him basically. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. When you really think about it. But this whole week is going to be crazy. It's a learning experience for everybody.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about before. And like, as much as people want to dog it, and I've probably said some negative things about it before too, I think there's an element of fun because now it's almost like you're starting on Sunday, but then you get three extra rounds after it. Because it's like starting any tournament after round one where some guy goes shoots 5-under and guys shoot 4-under, 3-under. What's the difference in reality? Like, sure, you got a head start for one round, but now you're playing four rounds of golf. Let's see what happens. Like, let's go. Anything can happen. Like, you were just talking about how your game was off. How many times have you played like a three-day tournament and you've always had that one really bad round and you go, oh shit, I got to figure it out again. Happens all the time. Like, right. We just talked about Hideki going 63, 73, 63. So like this could get fun when weather gets involved. I think it'll be a lot better than people think. And the part I do like is it gives us an exact winner. Unlike years past, you could win this event, still not win the whole thing. It was really weird. This makes it pretty interesting. But for me up top, I do like Rory a ton. You mentioned past champion. He's also finished 7th, 16th, 2nd, 10th at this course. Plays it very well, coming in great form ever since the Open debacle. The other guy I do like, I know he's 12 too, but give me Brooks Koepka. If there's anybody that can just go torch a field and not give a crap about the environment around him and is actually pretty darn accurate off the tee for a big boy hitter, it's Brooks Koepka. So those are the two guys I like quite a bit. Those are the two that I think can catch JT, barring JT like staying hot. Now, if JT falls back, obviously all hell can break loose. But if JT keeps playing well, I like Brooks or I like Rory. Those are the two guys I'll be focusing most of my attention on if I go up top in this range.
I can't believe you didn't even mention Big Game Hunter.
That's what he is. Like,
I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
$15 million. You mentioned the drop down to second place. Did you see his tweet over the weekend?
No.
Oh, okay. So some guy tweets him because he had like that bad Friday, Saturday. He shot 5-under Sunday, finished 24th. Some guy tweets him like, you cost me $1 or $5, whatever, because I bet on you to win my fantasy lineups. Goes on this whole thing about him. And the guy goes, now I'm at the drive. Or he's all, what drives you to even come play at these events? And all Brooks does in his response, Brinks truck. It was freaking amazing. I'm like, I tell you, I said it since I saw him live at the Open. What this guy oozes in like confidence and just F you, I am a humongous fan. It's just amazing what he does.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be fazed by anything that takes place out there. Where some of these guys that we'll talk about in a little bit might shake in their boots a little bit. Brooks is literally going to be showing up maybe 5 minutes before that first tee time and really ready to rock and roll. So I'm all for it at 12-2. Big Game Hunter, Brooks Koepka. All right, 9K range. You got John Rahm at 99, Webb at 97, Xander at 95, Hideki at 93, and Cooch at 91. Very interesting range, as you'd expect, in the top 30 field. What are you doing with this one?
I would start with Rahm. I do think he will be decently popular. Obviously, he's playing really well. He's played here twice, 11th, 7th, the last 2 years. Has not finished outside the top 10, which is not going to be that difficult this week to finish. I mean, you would think odds are he's going to finish inside the top 10. Hasn't finished outside the top 10 since the Open Championship. He finished 11th there. So he has one top 10 in his last – or one finished outside the top 10 in his last 7 starts. Pretty incredible. Missed 2 cuts on the tour this year, back in May, basically, and had 2 top 10s before that. I mean, the dude is just in fuego at this point. One guy who I think is interesting right below him is Webb. He's played this golf course a ton, finished 4th here last year. He's got another 4th place finish back in 13. They're both starting at 4 under par. So, there's a little bit of salary relief there with Webb. He's playing, obviously, really, really good golf at this point, too. The other thing that kind of leads me towards him is, he's not getting a whole heck of a lot of buzz. It's early, I know, on FanShare. They've done this really cool thing where they've integrated their stuff into Fantasy Labs, which makes things easier for me to kind of digest, and he's not getting nearly the buzz kind of Xander is and Rahm is at this point. Like I said, super early, which Monday, so things will change. But those would be the two guys that I'd be targeting at this point.
Yeah, for me, you hit on Rahm. The way I felt about Brooks and Rory being able to come back and win a tournament and, like, just their form right now, John Rahm might be in even better form than those guys. Like, the consistency he's putting in time and time again, I still think those two guys are better golfers than John Rahm, but just consistent championship-level golf, John Rahm, it's hard to beat what he's doing out there right now. He's finished 11th and 7th here, like you said before. He's coming in 5th, 3rd, 7th, 11th, 1st, 3rd in his last 6. That's just ridiculous. And those are in some pretty elite fields. So he's not just playing, you know, in some European tour where no one's playing. Like, he's legit getting it done. So I'm a big fan of that. He can. He's a guy that can get birdies in bunches, too, if he's on. So I don't mind John Rahm, especially in a no-cut event. He seems to be a little less kind of – when he screws up in no-cut events, I think he even realizes he has 4 days to fix this. So, you know, he doesn't get as high strung, it looks like, in those four games, at least what I've noticed on TV. So Rahm at 99 a lot. Xander, I'm a big fan of. I jumped back on him this past week, finished 19th. Like, he kind of just faded over the weekend. He really had it going early on. Like you mentioned, he's a defending champion here. 2 years ago, he won the championship, finished 7th here last year, really plays well at this course. If he's chalky, obviously you kind of want to avoid the chalk here. At the same time, the course history is hard to ignore. And then the third guy, if we're talking accuracy off the tee and we're talking approach game, we're talking Hideki Matsuyama. He finished 3rd last week, like we talked about. He's finished 4th here last year, 26th, 5th, 12th, 22nd. So 2 top fives in the last 2 of the last 3 years of this tournament at this golf course. There's no one more. There's not many more guys that can play with the iron game the way he can, the approach game he can. It's always the flat stick with him, and he was putting it really well last weekend. So Hideki Matsuyama at 93 is another guy I don't mind there. So if you want to take Xander out of the mix, give me Rahm, give me Hideki. That's where I'll be focusing my attentions there. 8K range. This one will be really fun. You got a red-hot Tony Finau at 8,800, Ricky Fowler at 86, DJ Dustin Johnson, folks, $8,400. For the people that have never played golf before, like, what the heck is this? But, yeah, they don't know the format. Scott at 82, Woodland at 8,000. There's some interesting arguments to be made here, Jesse. What are you looking at?
I would start with Finau. He's playing, like you said, very well. He had a great showing last week, finished 4th, all 4 rounds under 70, which, you know, wasn't super difficult at that golf course. But he's played East Lake twice, finished 15th here last year, 7th the year before that. So I think he's fine. I do kind of think that people will jump back on him, especially in your kind of high-dollar contest. He tends to be pretty popular, but I don't mind Finau. The other guy would be Adam Scott for me at $8,200. His stats line up really well as far as, like, he's hitting it really close. He's got the opportunities. He's actually making a lot of birdies. His approach game is just on point at this point. So I like him quite a bit at $8,200. He is starting at what? What's he starting at?
Adam Scott. I got him right here.
300. At
300, yeah.
Yeah. Him and Finau both starting at 300 par. So he hasn't played here since 16, but he finished 8th that year, 9th the year before that. Has another top 10 mixed in there. So at $8,200, give me him and quite a bit of him. Hopefully he'll bring the broom putter. So for me in this range, it's Finau and Scott.
Yeah, we're pretty much on the same page here. I watched a lot of golf on Sunday, and that final grouping of Cantlay, JT, and Finau was fun to watch because it was like the Cantlay and JT show, but Finau was just peppering. Like, he came on the back nine real strong, but he was hitting some really good golf shots, very consistent, very accurate. 15th and 7th here his last 2 years, a 3rd and a 4th and 2 his last 4 events on tour. I really like the form he's coming in on. Another guy in a no-cut event can just go birdie crazy. So he's a guy I like a lot. Adam Scott, I'm a big fan of. He's one of those guys, like, we talk about upper echelon talent that's going to be priced down this week. People might flock to DJ and company, but I love me some Adam Scott coming in just in great form, picks the tournaments he wants to play in. He has 3 top 10s at this golf course, a 9th and a 5th the last 2 weeks on tour, playing phenomenal golf. Like, if anybody can make a run from, you know, starting 7 shots back to maybe at least top 5 in this bad boy, Adam Scott's definitely in the mix there. So I like him at $8,200. And then last but not least, he showed some signs of life last week, but then fell apart on Sunday again. He's finished 11th, 19th, 10th, and 9th. The last four times he's played here is Gary Woodland at 8,000. He had a huge Saturday, but then Sunday kind of disappeared again. I wouldn't mind giving him a look at 8,000 if you need a little bit of salary with some upside and a no-cut event. All right, 7K range. You got Fleetwood at 77, Casey at 75, Sneds at 73, and Answer at 71. Personally, Jesse, this is not a very sexy range for me, but I don't even know if I'll be here, but maybe that might be a consensus argument, and we might need to be here. So who are you looking at in the 7K range?
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I'm not a huge fan. I mean, if I'm in this range and I've got 70, less than 8,000 left or whatever, you know, I'm probably looking at Tommy Fleetwood more than anybody else. Just for the pure ball striking standpoint, finished 11th here last year in his only appearance, and he's coming off the 11th place finish last week. So that's who I would be leaning towards. But again, you know, I'm with you. I'm not super high on any of these guys. And I really will go, I think, more stars and scrubs this week than, you know, even a normal week. So I don't know if I'll be here, but if it is, then Tommy Fleetwood's the guy for me.
Yeah, Fleet's a guy you've seen go low before. But for me, if I have to go anywhere here, and at this point in time, I don't want to, but it'd be Paul Casey. He has phenomenal course history. Not coming in the greatest form, you know, 24th last week, 13th a couple weeks ago, but he finished 11th here last year, then a 5th, a 4th, a 5th, didn't play for 4 years, and then in 2010 finished 4th. So that's four top fives out of five tournaments here for Paul Casey. So he can score at this golf course, someone to keep an eye on. The other guy, if I'm in this range, it's probably because I want, you know, some ownership to begin with. So I wouldn't mind looking at Abraham Answer at $7,100. I don't think anyone's going to own him this week, especially in this range, because I think Stars and Scrubs will be maybe more popular, because I agree. I want to be in the – I'd rather be in the 6 and 5K range than play Answer at 71. But Answer is starting out 4 under par. It's ahead of, Scott and company we were just talking about. So Answer at 4 under, go low a couple days at $7,100. I don't hate him if I have to go in this range. $6,000. Got Justin Rose at 69, Kiz at 66, Leishman at 63, and Corey Connors at 61. I can't wait to see how chalky Corey Connors is, and I kind of hate it because I really like him as well. What do you like in the $6,000 range?
Yeah, I like Connors too. I mean, if he is chalky, obviously, I would rather not. I feel like Justin Rose will be super chalk, though, too.
You think 69. So? People just see his name and go, I got a plan. Well, look at his course history.
Yeah, course history is just absolutely phenomenal. 4th, 10th, 2nd, 4th, 6th, 2nd, 20th. and that's basically every year since 11 minus 2016. So he's been around here quite a few times. He's coming off a 52nd finish last week. He did not play very well. But before that, 10th and 11th. I mean, if I want to pivot off somebody, I would rather go Kisner. I actually jumped on him last week just kind of late because I felt like the course would set up well for him. I won and done him too and got a top 10 out of it. He finished 9th last week, 12th the week before that, 27th week before that, 30th the week before that. So, you know, I like Kisner. He's also a Southern dude. You know, we're in Georgia here. He's starting 2 under par. Rose is also starting 2 under par. Kind of odd that Sneds is priced above those two guys. And he's also starting at 2 under par. And he's actually quite a bit. I know he's a past champion here, but that was a long time ago. Sneds is at 73. These two guys are at 69 and 66. So Kevin Kisner is the pivot for me off of Rose. If you don't want to play a chalky Rose, I feel like Rose might be 40% plus owned.
I wouldn't be shocked. And that's my problem in the 6K range right now. Like, Rose and Connors are my two dudes. If they're chalky, it's going to be tough. Like, you can have a little chalk in your lineup, but because Connors, I love his form right now. I love his approach game. I love his iron game. He's been just money week in and week out right now. 7th, 21st, 22nd, 27th. It's in pretty good fields. I like where his head's at. He's never played here before. He starts at 1 under. $6,100 opens up a lot for that lineup. So, you know, if he's stupid chalky, I'll probably pivot. But for now, I like him a lot down here. Rose is a great play. I'm not playing chalky Rose, though. I'd rather move around elsewhere. But for now, he's on my list for some reason. If he's not, I like the Kisner call. I'm a big fan of Kisner. I've been on him a lot down the stretch here. He likes these kind of – I have to double check. I think he does really well on Donald Ross courses. I forgot to do the fan cheer report. I have it pulled up, so I'll do some fan cheer stuff after we're all done before we do our final talk stuff. But I do like that Kisner pivot. That's a pretty good call there by you. All right, 5K. There's actually, this might be our largest group. You got M at 59, Oosty at 57, Bryson DeChambeau at 55. He almost got out of the top 30. He played so bad over the weekend. Kokrak at 53, Glover at 52, Reavy at 51, and Howell at 5,000. How funny would it be? Because DeChambeau is one of the even par guys. If they put him in the first group and he gets to slow the whole tournament down.
First of all, did you see his little like rebuttal Instagram video he put out?
I think I missed that. I saw a lot of the stuff earlier, but I think I missed it. I didn't see an Instagram thing.
Well, I mean, he basically was like saying, you know, I play fast and, you know, more or less fuck all the haters, right? And then he goes out and plays like just absolute dog shit. Oh, but that was in a statement. That was in the post round interview that he had done the week prior. But then he puts this video out before the tournament started, and I think it was during the pro am, and then went out and just absolutely played like shit. I mean, I don't know. I won't be on him. Give me all the guys Kokrak and below. And the reason is because if you play any of these four guys, Kokrak, Glover, Reavy, or Howell, I'm not huge on Reavy, but I mean, I think he's totally playable at 5,100. But Kokrak, especially, if you plug these guys in, that's a lot of salary relief. You can do a lot more up top. It's the ultimate stars and scrubs type of thing. Kokrak, especially, I mean, I just love the way he's playing at this point. Dude's making birdies, making putts, finally. Again, these guys down here in this range are going to have zero pressure on them. They're not expected to win. They can go out and basically, you know, play pretty freely and just try to, you know, try to climb the leaderboard day by day by day, see what happens. You know, they're guaranteed a shit ton of money for us average people. And then the opportunity to just basically go up. So I'm a big fan of these guys. Glover's playing well enough. And then Howell, you know, at $5,000, yeah, like bare minimum. Okay. He hasn't played here since 2011. He finished sixth in 2011. You know, finished 37th last week, missed the cut to Northern Trust, but he's here. So, you know, I'm more than willing to take the bottom price guy in this field and give myself all kinds of different options up top. So that's what, that's where I'll be leaning, especially Kokrak and Howell. Those would be my two favorite plays down here. I'm totally fine with Glover. Like I said, if you want to put Reavy in there, I think Reavy will be one of the lowest owned probably on the whole entire slate.
Yeah, the three guys I like a lot is Sungjae. I talked about him earlier. His birdie making ability in a 4-round event is huge, coming off an 11th to 38th and a 6th in his last three. So I like him quite a bit. And then Kokrak and Glover, my other two guys. Kokrak never won a tournament before. First time in the finals. Last week got him into his first ever Masters. Like, he's jacked up. His interview was pretty pumped on this. And he can score in bunches, and his approach game is pretty money. Like you said, if he's putting, he's good. 19th, 12th, and 6th in the three FedEx in his last three tournaments. So there's a lot to like there with Kokrak. And then Glover, same thing. This dude's having like a career renaissance, and he wants to keep it going. Finished 10th here when he played back here in 09. Finished 7th last week, and to get into this cha-cha, I like those guys a lot. Reavy, I don't hate. I don't mind it. He's not on my near the top of my list. But for me, it's M, it's Kokrak, it's Glover down here. And I don't know if I want to share the lineup I just made, but you can have a lot of fun if you play down here. Like, it's,
oh yeah, it opens up a shit ton.
I left money on the table, and I still don't mind it at all. Like, it's, yeah, I'm going to put that one in a tournament for sure.
That's the other thing, especially if you're going to play JT. Like, so if you put JT in a lineup, that automatically leaves you with $6,900. So, I mean, obviously you can go down to Rose, you can get Kisner, but if you get these guys down low, just say you put Howell and Kokrak in, you're back up to $8,000 left for the last three. And again, like you said, you just mentioned it, leaving money on the table is, you know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of dupes. It's quite possible that the winning lineup is, you know, more than $49,500 in salary usage. But if you leave more than 500 on the table, you'll give yourself a better chance to not be duplicated. So, I mean, I've seen different opinions on that, whether that's optimal or not. But the thing is, like, we don't know the optimal lineup until Sunday. So,
yep,
you know, it very well could be that, you know, it's the full salary, or it could be, you know, $49,300. Who knows?
And the other thing I'd highly recommend, I know we've said it many times talking about tournaments like this, I'd stick to no more than 3 max for me. If you want a 20 max, sure, but 3 max single entries is where I'd be staying. I wouldn't get too crazy because then you're going to get a lot of dupes, a lot of weird stuff going on.
Yeah, if you get up in the I think it's $5 this week or something in the biggest GPP on DK there. So obviously there'll be a shit ton of lineups that are duplicated on that. But even there, I mean, you can differentiate yourself and make yourself a little bit different. I mean, if you're super high on JT and you want to plug him in, I'm not against that at all, but he's going to be high owned. So you've got to figure out a way to try to make yourself a little bit different. And play some super chalk. I mean, you're not going to avoid chalk this week. This is not going to happen. So, last year in this deal, the lowest owned player was Patton Kizzire. And it was totally different pricing, but he was 1% owned. The next guy was Aaron Wise at basically 8% owned. So
I think a good way to go about it is when you were saying a little bit ago, we talked about it, is you could almost not even worry about ownership if you wanted to, but differentiate by leaving money on the table. Because then your lineup will still be different.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you could definitely do that for sure.
Like, if there's guys you really want to play them. Just make sure you differentiate the way you build your lineup maybe more than the players you use, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. You know, there's a lot of different ways to go about this. And this is, any no-cut event is very tilting.
Yes.
But especially when you only got 30 options. I mean,
because I had 3 6-6 lineups last week. I didn't get much of anything back.
Yeah. Yeah, I had all 6-6s. Yes, yeah, that's a good point. I didn't have any JT, therefore I didn't have any money. Exactly. I'm telling you, you're going to have the winner on it.
This week you have to have him because I had some pretty good lineups. I had like 3 or 4 guys in the top 10, but no JT meant really no money.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing a 3 max, I probably start one with one of the top 3. You might take Rory instead of one of those guys up top there, besides Cantlay or Brooks or JT, whichever one you don't want to play or whatever. And kind of go from there, just make 3 lineups that way and then fill them in or whatever. But you got to think the winner is probably going to come from somebody who's 4 under or better. These guys starting 10 shots back are just, they're way behind the 8 ball.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, but I just sent you a glimpse of that lineup that has my attention. But before we do like a recap of our picks, I'll go to the fan share stuff. Don't forget, if you want to get the NFL season-long pass for $99.95, it ends August 31st. So we highly recommend checking it out. And go there and use promo code ALWAYSPRESS, all one word, to get the season pass or 25% off any package of your choice for golf or football. Guys coming in good form draftings-wise in the last 6 events. Rory, but then Webb comes in 2nd. Lucas Glover, 3rd in this field. Patrick Reed, 4th. Brooks, 5th. John Rahm, 6th. Cantlay, 7th. Rose, 8th. And Justin Thomas, 9th. If we look at the past 6 events on Bermuda Greens, which we'll be dealing with here, you got Rory. Cooch finishes 2nd. John Rahm, 3rd. Kisner, 4th. Fowler, 5th. DJ, 6th. Fleetwood, Usti, Rose, and Thomas. So some names correlate, some a little different, but kind of look at some of the guys we liked. And then if you look at the last 6 events on par 70 courses between 7,200 and 7,400 yards, aka where we're playing this week, you got DJ, Brooks, JT, Rose, Rory, Rahm, Finau, Sneds finds the list, and then Matsuyama. So a lot of bombers enjoy that kind of format. And then if you want to bear with me real quick, I'll just do a Donald Ross design. We'll just do all Donald Rosses. I won't try to get too cute with the certain distances. But thanks, Fanshare, for letting me log back in. I appreciate it. Give me 2 seconds here, and I will set this one up again. Just do that. Do Donald Ross. See, it's super easy to use Fanshare, guys. Apply filter, and voila. In this event, Webb Simpson, Jason Kokrak finishes 2nd, less than half a DK point behind Webb Simpson the last 6 Donald Ross courses. Let's keep that in mind. Xander is 3rd. Sungjae Im is 4th. CH3 is 5th. Rory 6th. Paul Casey 7th. JT 8th. Scott 9th. Rose 10th. So by no means are these end-all be-alls, but when Jesse and I are talking about players, how to differentiate, guys' current form, guys have feels for golf courses, when I see certain things that kind of stand out to help me decide between player A and player B, that's good stuff. And there's some of those low price guys that really like playing at these kind of golf courses. So something to keep in mind there. All right, let's recap it real quick. Give me your top guy, 10K and above, Jesse.
I'll say Rory.
I'll go Brooks. I'll go with the big game hunter. Top guy in the 9K range.
Rom.
Yeah, it's Rom for me too. I can't. I've been on that train. He's playing too good. Like literally, if Brooks wasn't doing his thing, I think people would pay more attention to what Rom's been doing. He's just not finishing, but he's been crazy good. Rom's doing the Finau of last year almost.
Yeah.
Who's your top guy in the 8K range?
Adam Scott.
I like the Scott call a lot. I'll differentiate with Finau, but Scott calls, that's really good. 7K, give me one.
Fleetwood.
I'll go, that sucks. I hate this range. I'll go, not even a guy to talk about. I'll go Sneds now. I'm going to go Sneds. I don't even want to be in this range. 6K, give me one guy.
I'll say Kisner.
I'll go Connors, but I like your Kiss call. And then 5K range, one guy.
100% Kokrak.
Yeah, I'm starting to like him more and more. Since he used Kokrak, I'll use Sungjae. I like those two quite a bit. All right, if you had to pick a core three at this point in time that you're going to build around, who would it be?
Rory, Kokrak, and Howell.
Mine will be Brooks, Rom, and let's go with... I'll go Sungjae. That'd be my big three for now. All right. Who's your pick to win this craziness?
It's a great question.
Because like JT is 2.5 to 1 odds.
Yeah, 2.5 to 1. Yeah.
So
pretty short for a golf tournament.
Like you gotta get weird if you like Adam Scott's 30-1 if you think he can make the comeback. Rom's 14-1. I think that's got some validity to it.
I like the Rom call there, man. As far as odds go, I think he's got the firepower to come back. Adam Scott is
30-1.
Yeah, but he's 3-under. So, I mean,
7 shots back. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at 7, that's double the odds. I think that's got value as well.
Yeah. So, some of these are interesting. I think what people that do bet on these bet live, like after the first round, stuff like that, you might get some really good odds on some guys.
Yeah, you might.
Like, say Brooks goes 2-over and he's like 5 shots back or something. You might get a great number on Brooks Koepka for the like the best number you've probably ever seen.
What is he now?
He's 5.5 to 1. Like you might at least get like a 10-1 or something, and then you might just want to throw a hammer at something because if anybody can do it, that's your boy.
Yeah.
But all right, this was a lot more fun than I expected from a 30-man field because it was different. It wasn't like the Hero or any garbage like that.
Right.
But what are your final thoughts here? Because I really recommend. I know we say it a lot. People should come in the Slack chat. I think we can have a lot of fun conversations in there. One of us is always around. Our other guys help each other. There'll be guys answering questions. We got Dirework in there, who's just an animal, like with graphs and all kinds of crap. Like it's awesome. But yeah, I highly recommend. This is a great week to come in and just hang out with the guys and talk some shop. But what are your final thoughts on this?
Don't go all in. This is just so much that could happen this week. It's like I said, you've got to have the winner. So it's going to be a difficult week to cash, let alone, I mean, obviously somebody's going to make some money this week on DraftKings, but these events are notoriously difficult to win at. And then we got 2 weeks off, man.
Yeah. And then we're back to the Safeway.
Yeah. No, it's the Greenbrier, dude.
Oh, Greenbrier, then the Safeway, I think.
Yeah. So the Greenbrier is September 12th through the 15th. So it's basically 2 weeks from – actually, I guess it would be 3 weeks. Yeah. So 3 weeks from Thursday. So we've got 2 weeks off after this. But we'll do a – we won't leave you guys hanging. We'll do a recap pod at some point between
– Yeah, just like last year, that season recap.
Yeah, I mean, that was a lot of fun. That actually helps. Yeah.
Get ready for the next season.
Yeah, remembering some of this stuff. So we'll get that in for you guys. And, if there's anything else you'd like to hear from us, you can always shout us on Twitter or wherever. We're happy to oblige.
Yeah, because we like to talk golf, period. I think some of the more fun shows we've done are when we've had guests on, like when we talked to, your buddy. That was a ton of fun.
Lee, yeah. Kevin Price was a good time.
Kevin Price
from web.com.
I think we're going to get him back on. I keep in touch with him. On, yeah. He's awesome. Good. He's getting big time now though. So
I know he is.
But he's earned it. He's busting his ass
off. Oh, 100%, dude. Did you see some of those videos he made with No Laying Up there?
Where he was talking about
this is the biggest week of the year in sports.
That's why I'm worried that No Laying Up's taking our guy now.
I don't blame him, dude.
Well, I don't blame him either.
Go find somebody who has more passion
for
a sport than him.
And he's not even arrogant or anything. He's just not at all.
That, but also, like, it's not even the PGA Tour. He's talking about the Corn Ferry Tour.
Yeah, this is like me with baseball following, like, AA baseball.
That's crazy.
but then I love his feed.
Times 100.
Yeah. But I like his feed, like when he's stuck in the airport overnight and they give him like his hotel problems. He's got some of the best stories
We've gone completely off the radar here, but did you see his tweet earlier about he took a van back and they tried to charge him for a scratch and he had a picture and then they said it wasn't full of gas and he showed him.
It's awesome. His travel stories are amazing.
Is it at Kevin Price, PRISE, I think. If anybody's still listening through this.
Oh, well, they should be, because this is what Golf Talk's all about. Yeah. But I'll get his Twitter handle, because it involves a PGA in there. I got it right here. Let me check the good old DMs, because he's a busy man, but once in a while he answers questions. But there
it's
he is,
at PGA Tour Kevin. Yeah.
Yep, at PGA Tour Kevin. So check him out. We'll get him again this off season and much, much more. But, yeah, before we keep going off the rails, you can find Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. I'm at BD Antrick, and the podcast is at Always Press DFS. If you're rating and review on iTunes, we'd appreciate it. But this was your 2019 Tour Championship preview. Catch you guys later. Oh,